Hello there, bakeroos and bakerettes. Welcome to the Rise Up Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Dick, and this is the show about bakers and bakeries and bakery owners and all the folks that work so hard, often through the night, to make the good stuff and share it with the people in their community. How are you this week? Happy New Year to you. I hope you had a great holiday season. I hope you're taking a break this week. This is where I live. On Vancouver Island, this is the traditional, we are closed for a couple of days after the holidays type of season. Most of the bakeries around here are reopening in a couple of days, but the crew and the bakers and the owners and all that stuff are taking a well-deserved week off after some pretty wild holiday times. We ate our fill this holiday season. Lots of food, lots of baking. Lots of family. It was wonderful. If you've been listening to the podcast, you know our daughter Robin was home from England for an entire week with us and then went back to Saskatchewan for a week there. And she's already back in England after her whirlwind tour. It was a lot of fun spending time with her. It really was. We went to a lot of different breakfast restaurants in town, some of them twice, and ate like pigs. Robin brought a suitcase full of British snack treats for us to sample, you know, the cheapo kind of Tesco stuff, but it was all delicious. And we ate our fill of that, plus our home baking, plus things that we bought from bakeries around town. So we weren't suffering for food to eat. That's for darn sure. Although finally, after 2 weeks, we had to go and get some groceries yesterday and restock the fridge. We'd eaten sort of all of the food we had, plus all of the leftovers we had. And it was time to get into some fresh cooking. And, you know, not to be outdone, our son Ben and his partner Laura came over from Vancouver, spent a couple days with us too. And we had just had a great time, quiet Christmas, playing cards, playing games, eating food, going for walks just to get outside a little bit. It was good. And then the snow came. Yay! Yeah, we actually got snow on Vancouver Island and the mainland of BC, they got quite a bit of snow. In Victoria, we got a pretty good dump of snow and it stayed around for over a week. And it was just beautiful wintertime here because it wasn't one of those, is it raining? Is it snowing? And then you wake up and there's a big dump of snow. This was proper snow in cold temperatures. It got down to like -5 Celsius, maybe even -7 Celsius, which by Saskatchewan standards is spring-like. It's just beautiful. They were getting -37 back home, but we were out in the sunshine and snow at -5 and rosy cheeks and cool to the skin. And it was fun just tramping about and having a great time. And it was sunny and bright and lovely. And so a proper week of winter. And then it rained and all the snow left and it's green again. So there you go. That's what it's like living where I live. But it was a good time, and I hope it was a good time for you. I've been a little quiet on the social medias and stuff, although I did see quite a few posts right around Christmas time about how busy everyone was. And I've seen a few posts about people taking a break, and I'm grateful for that. I took a break, as you know, did a couple of Second Rise episodes, which got some good feedback about that as well, I have to say. The chat with Jesse Merrill was well received even the second time round, as was the chat with Blair and Andrew at Elmore Mountain Bread. Folks really liked that one. Got a lot of really good feedback about the round table chat with Robin and Cindy talking about the old days at Orange Boot Bakery, which was fun. I always worry that it might be self-indulgent just to sit around and talk about our experiences, but they was well received. Got 3 or 4 really nice emails about that, so that was nice. Today on the show, I have a chat that we recorded back on St. Nicholas Day in early December with Laura Schutz from Austria. She's a baker and bakery student and baking teacher and English language teacher and many, many things. Extremely interesting woman. And we had a very good chat just before Christmas. And, you know, after we had our conversation, I thought, rather than have this be the last show of 2021, let's kick off the new year with this conversation. So that's what we're going to do. Before then, though, I do want to give a shout out to my buddy Knut Radloff from Oregon. Actually came to Victoria for New Year's Eve with his partner Julie, and reached out and said, hey, let's get together and we'll grab a coffee. And so we did. We met them at their hotel, Cindy and I did. I had met Knut at Wheatstock in 2018 very briefly. And when he sent me an email saying, I'm coming to Victoria, do you want to visit? I couldn't quite remember who he was until the second I saw him. I said, oh yeah, I remember you. And a really nice fella, and Julie's fantastic. And so we went for a tour around, showed him around some of our favorite places in downtown Victoria. And we stopped at a coffee shop, had a good chat, talked about his adventures in working and baking a little on the side and thinking about getting into his own place and what might that look like and some of the stages that he did. And it was just a really, really fun day with Knut and Julie. And I was really appreciative of them reaching out, and especially traveling to Canada from the States in COVID times. Holy Dinah, they went through some work to get up here. Let me say, you know, a lot of tests that they had to schedule and that, and then, you know, book the ferries and get across and more tests and all of that stuff. So they wanted to visit Victoria and see the city. And I think they had a really good time here. And I'm just grateful because it was somebody to visit with face to face, which I don't get a lot of in these unprecedented times. I don't know how many years this has to go on before it's unprecedented. Maybe it'll be precedented soon. Yeah, so thanks, Knut. It was great to talk to you and a lot of fun to hang out. And, oh, just one sec. Knut also brought us two cookies that he made, Christmas cookies, German Christmas cookies, and he wrote the name down for me, Mandelhornchen cookies, which are horseshoes, like very sweet and almondy, covered in almonds, dipped in chocolate. Absolutely delicious. Oh my goodness. And he said, you know, oh, well, these are a little old and they've aged a bit because, you know, I baked them before we came up and drove up from Oregon. I don't care. They were the best cookies I ever had. So delicious. So thanks for that. That was a real treat. Cindy and I took our time eating them, although we just wanted to gobble them up. And that's also a bit of foreshadowing for the conversation with Laura coming up, because we talk about Austrian Christmas cookies that she was making when we were talking. Okay, one last thing before the talk. Just want to give a shout out to all of the folks that have supported the show in 2021, and to the people that left me a little Christmas cheer by supporting the show, either signing up as a new monthly donor or giving a one-time donation over the holidays to support the Rise Up podcast. This show, as you know, is 100% listener supported. It's listeners like you that chip in a couple of dollars a month and keep the show going. And so I'm so appreciative of all of the people that from all over the world, really, that have supported the show either through a one-time donation or signing up for a few dollars a month. I really do appreciate it. If you want to become a show supporter, it's super easy. You just head over to riseuppod.com. Right at the top of the website is a support the show button. One click, boom, you can take care of that. And while you're there, check out the nearly 160 episodes that have already been posted. They're all there in the archives, and you can listen to all of them right from the website. So riseuppod.com, that's got all the good stuff. Okay, talking to Laura Schutz. Very interesting woman. I met Laura on Instagram. We did a little messaging back and forth, talking about stuff and things. And I said, hey, why don't you come on the show and we'll talk about this for real. And we did. She's a very interesting woman, has Canadian connections, has university connections, baking school, certification. We talk about the culture where she lives in rural Austria, tucked in the corner between Vienna and Hungary and the Czech Republic, of these small independent farms with the farm ladies that are also licensed bakers, because you can do that there. And it's really interesting. And we get into it. So I'll talk more about this afterwards, but let's get into the conversation with Laura Schütz from just outside of Vienna, Austria. Let's go. So I saw on, I saw on your Instagram profile, I believe, a Canadian flag, which I I wasn't expecting. So are you originally from Canada?
No. But I had the chance to study in Canada, and we lived for a while in Ottawa.
Oh, nice.
And I actually got into cooking and baking in Canada. I was there for a completely other purpose.
Oh.
And somehow I got into this. And if I'm allowed at the end of our conversation to give a shout out to my college in Toronto.
Oh, we can do it right now. Anytime. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that would be really great, because these people actually changed my perspective on baking and on food, and gave me a certain freedom and a certain, I don't know how to say this, more trust in myself, and a more open view over the whole thing. I mean, I don't know.
I'm super curious now. What happened with what did the change look like for you?
Yeah, so I'm coming from this baking tradition that I perceived for a while as very strict. You know, that Austrians love their rye breads, and we have to do it like this. And in Canada, it was, I didn't see this as special. You know, you grow up with this, you grow old with this. It's there. It's not a big deal. This on the one hand. On the other hand, there is this tradition, you know, it's tradition. We just do it like this. And then the Canadians, actually, they were like, oh my God, yes, you with your tradition and with your ingredients, this is so great. This is so wonderful. But look how the things got translated here, how we think about that, you know, how the people who came here brought their memories, their recipes, but they didn't have the same ingredients. And look how we translated these cookies, these cakes, these breads here.
Right. Yes.
So it was for me finding again some recipes, or rediscovering some recipes. Oh, I know this, but oh, it's so strangely familiar, but it's so different.
Right. You're making me think of my grandmother a bit, and baking with her, and she had the ingredients that she had, but you come into contact with so many different people from so many different backgrounds, and you let that percolate
for
50, 60 years. And all of a sudden she's making it from, based on a memory that's had so many adjustments through her life. And then I'm doing the same thing, trying to remember what my grandmother made and make all those adjustments. And so it's nothing like, you know, my great grandmother would never recognize anything, but she's there in my heart, kind of a thing.
Exactly.
Yeah, I get that.
And you know what other huge change my contact with the Canadian baking school brought me is this idea of, oh no, we only have to do it like that.
Right.
There is no other way. And then in Canada, I saw it that not only that we can, but sometimes we have to.
Right.
There is no other way, you know, and if you like to get at least a part of that product that you remember, that you loved or love, or that that you desire to have right now, that you're craving for, you have to do it any other way, you know? So it stepping outside my box.
This sure. Time. Well, and yeah. And I see in North America anyways, in a way, a bit of a yearning for more local fare, which kind of gets you into that local tradition, which you would have grown up with. It's like, this is exactly how we do it. And I think maybe the hybrid we have is that we can do it however we like, but the trend now is to say, at least do it, you know, my way at my shop, and you can do it your way at your shop, and let's appreciate that it's different, as opposed to
exactly
going to every place and there's a sameness to it. So,
and fascinating.
And so the Austrian baking traditions where you are right now, what's it like in December and with the holidays and that kind of thing? What's the
this is mad. this is mad. Now I love this season. I simply love it. We start now baking our Christmas cookies.
Okay.
And this is a cookie galore, really. I'm still debating now what kind of cookies should I bake, because I have on my list some Nanaimo bars. I would really like to bake some. Actually, to bake, well, you don't really bake them, but yeah. You know. Yeah. But we have this absolutely wonderful vanilla crescents.
Okay.
Which, yeah. Let's put it like this. For the past 2 years, I couldn't get them right.
Okay.
I lost my mojo. I have no clue why. I mean, I know why, but I was just using the wrong sugar. You have to use really the finest powder sugar that you can get. And in an act of rebellion of ignorance, better said, it just took normal sugar. And for sure, they looked wonderful till I took them out of the oven, and then they just started crumbling. So I had some wonderful vanilla flavored crumbles. lucky us, we still have in the family our grandma, and we still get some from her. We also still get some from some other ladies in the family. So we were covered, but it was just, I can't believe this, you know, and people were writing to me like, can you teach us how to make this? No, not anymore. And then we have also some other cookies that we personally really like. They are called Linzer Augen.
Okay.
So like Linzer eyes.
All right.
And they are also from a really soft, crumbly dough. And you put also some, depends what you have, currant jam or raspberry jam,
red. Yes.
Should be red, or apricot jam works too. And then another side of this cookie comes, and this has a small window, you know, shaped as a heart most of the time. And yeah, I mean, we have a long list of cookies, and I'm seriously debating. And of course, we have sourdough brioche in a lot of shapes. I make it sourdough. You can do it simply, so no normal yeasty brioche dough, and we just love this. Today we have Saint Nicholas.
Yes.
And together with Saint Nicholas, we have another character that's called the Krampus.
I heard of this. Yes.
And this is usually depicted. Now this character doesn't look that scary anymore. They created this funny looking character that nobody's afraid of him anymore. Looks more or less like a devil, but a really smiley one. So I actually made one of a brioche dough. It looked a little bit weird, you know, like bodybuilder. with really, really thin legs, the upper body really strong. Like, okay, my husband said, oh, do you think that he already ate some kids or what's going on here? I don't know. Maybe too many sweets. We don't know.
So you actually make a bread in the shape of the Krampus then?
Yes.
Oh, neat. Okay. Oh, so cool. Do you do Stollens there this time of year? Is that, or is that more of a German thing?
They're not really Austrian.
Okay.
But in the meantime, we got contaminated. So this is not such a big deal. You will hear the people, even I will say, oh, well, this is not really Austrian, but, you know. And funny that you mentioned this, tomorrow evening, I'm a part of an online Stollen class.
Oh, okay.
I'm there as a student.
Right.
Actually, not as a student, is a get-together from one of my husband's clubs. And a baker from Germany, also a member of the club, is organizing this. They did it last year with the pandemic and everything, and they had a huge success. And they said, well, why not this year too? And we are also raising some funds for some charity project.
Oh, nice.
And I'm looking forward for this. So it's
so cool. It's yeah. Nice. Well, I'm glad I asked, because I know there are distinct regional differences, you know, through the center of Europe, around food and wine and everything. I don't know near enough about it to know what the differences are. So it's a little risky. It's like, I know you're close, you're adjacent, but not there, right? So yeah.
Yeah, but the good thing nowadays, I believe, is that we become more and more open. Even here, again, coming from quite a strict tradition and this idea of, this is not really ours. But the people embrace this now. And to much of my surprise, I was thinking the other day how much ciabatta we have in the shops.
Interesting. Yeah.
You know, I mean, wherever you go, I don't think there's a bakery here that doesn't carry a ciabatta as we speak. And I'm like, seriously?
Interesting. Yeah. Tell me more about where in Austria you are, because I looked up your province your state, I guess, on the map, and it seems to be the most interesting design, long and skinny. So whereabouts are you?
There is a history. So I'm up north.
Okay.
We are only 60 kilometers away from Vienna. This means on the highway, depends on the traffic. Now with the lockdown, it's like 30 minutes. We are quite close to Hungary. We are close to Bratislava. So I'm in this corner, three country corner.
Right, yeah.
So it's like 30 minutes to Bratislava. I drive, I don't know, 20 minutes to Hungary, because sometimes we go shopping for vegetables or some Hungarian products, because, hey, why not? We are here. And then Vienna is so close, and I'm actually living in this wonderful and blessed region. Countryside. We're basically farmers. I'm surrounded by farmers, the family. They are wine producers.
Okay.
And I have access to a lot of wonderful vegetables, locally grown. But at the same time, if I want to go to the opera, I'm there in no time. So it's a really gorgeous place.
Yeah, I can imagine. Sounds amazing.
I walk like 10 minutes to the lake. And in summer, you can go swimming. In winter, if we are lucky, which doesn't really happen lately, we can go ice skating. It's amazing. It's simply an amazing region.
Wow. And is that a region that you're originally from?
No, I'm of Eastern European heritage.
Okay.
And I actually met my husband through work. He's an Austrian, raised and born since, I don't know, his family chronicle goes back like 800 years.
Oh, my goodness.
Something
wow.
Something like this.
Wow.
Yeah. And then we lived a while abroad,
Yeah.
We had this Canada time, and then we decided, okay, what should we do now? He had a great job offer, and then, yeah, we came to Austria.
Right.
And we are living in his grandparents' house that we
really wow
actually renovated, and yeah.
That's so neat.
Full of history, I would say.
Sure. Oh yeah. Yeah. And family history for sure. Yeah. That's very similar. My dad, he still lives out on the farm, in Saskatchewan, which is my grandparents' house originally. Right. And so it's sort of, you know, so a couple generations, but our family there only goes back to the 1940s, which still seems like a long time for me, but it's a different
yeah, world. This is amazing to get the history of the family here, which for me is close to impossible, because my family has a history of migration, my great grandparents, then my grandparents too, and they moved from Serbia to Romania.
Okay.
And during the communism, there was a lot of trouble ongoing. They lost their family name and so on and so forth. And it's hard to really go back to reconstruct exactly the family history. And this is why I value even more the fact that I came here into a tradition.
Right. Yeah. Oh, I could understand that.
I'm very fond of this, and we combine food traditions and customs for Christmas. We celebrate two times Christmas, one the Catholic Christmas, and then the Christmas on the old Orthodox tradition.
Right. Yes. So
two times cookies.
I get it. It's the same here, you know, or when I was growing up anyways, like the translations, especially when by the time both my sets of parents immigrated to Canada, the boundaries changed and the stories they told changed, because I always grew up thinking we were on my mom's side of the family that we were Ukrainian. And we always talked about Ukrainian Christmas and Ukrainian New Year, meaning, you know, with the Orthodox calendar and all of that.
Yeah.
Like the family founded, you know, a Ukrainian Orthodox church and all of that. And then they found letters and made contact with family members who are on the Black Sea in Romania now. And it's like, well, that, and so not knowing, you know, until you look at a map, you think, well, it's the same. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. You know, borders change. It's like, no, there's. That is, the more I read and dig into it, as it's completely different histories and geographies and all that stuff. And so
this, I would have expected everything, but not that your family has roots in Romania.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. And because in the 1970s, and I have a photocopies of letters that were sent. Well, in my great aunt was born over there and has a Romanian passport now, because she went in her later life, she went Amazing. Back to visit the family and make connections with the cousins and that kind of a thing over there. And she was the sort of the one person, you know, that went back, and she was in her 80s when she did this, you know, and brought back some pictures and stuff. And we had no idea, you know, and you just didn't know. And so it's, which is, well, just getting it back to food a little bit is, I think, why in, especially on the prairies in Canada, you know, the Romanians, the Ukrainians, the Russians, the Poles, everybody, it's all the same. All the food is merged to where it's called different names in your house, but it's the same things when you bring it out, right?
And
it's like the, you know, one calls them pierogies, one calls them Veraniki, you know, one calls the Easter bread kolach, one calls it Pascha, and we just all make it and share it, and it's all good, you know.
Yeah. But, or you have the sarma, which is in any case, so in this Romanian, Bulgarian, Serbian, Greek,
right?
Even going back to the Turkish, you know, the dolma, actually everything what you basically, you take a wine leaf or a cabbage leaf, and you put something inside, and here you have this product, and the name is more or less the same.
That's right.
Yep. Just small variations, and you go there and say, "Hey, but I know this."
Yeah. Well, cabbage rolls is the thing, right? Like, that was more the family distinctive thing. Was how did you make your cabbage rolls? And it's sort of
definitely
the rice to meat ratio and stuff.
And if they are bigger,
The Serbs
of the Serbian side of the family always had this, you know, like huge ones. And my mom, who actually has also a complicated heritage, also drawing back at the Black Sea shore.
Right.
She always made them like this, really small and delicate. Mm-hmm. And crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's one, they're almost a meal in themselves. And the other, it's an accompaniment. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's so funny. The other thing that I wanted to ask you about, just in the emails we swapped, and that is this idea that you're doing like English as a second language teaching in Austria now. And you know, I will put my hand up and say I'm ignorant of that. How is that a thing in Austria? Why is that is that a popular thing, or is there a lot of people trying to learn English, or is it more for like immigrants coming in?
No, it's like actually everywhere in my part of Europe, let's put it like because English is very important also for our professional life. To give you the example of my husband, who had to learn English quite later in life, so after he was in his 30s, because he just needed this in order to get a better position at work. As the companies got more and more international, you know, joint ventures, getting to cooperation, then he had to work with some guys in Texas, for example, which leads us to the day that he can understand a Texan better than I can do that, or that I will ever be able to do that. Yeah, it is a thing. And it becomes, in Austria, it wasn't that much of a thing, but I can feel now a dramatic change into this attitude, because yes, German is an international language, and definitely in the technical profession, German is still, I believe, the leading language. But if you know German and you also know English, then your chances for a great job increase dramatically.
Sure. So you're teaching, are you teaching children or are you teaching adults?
No, I'm teaching adults in a corporate environment.
Oh, nice.
Now I'm kind of doing this half-half with my baking activity. So I started with last year. I mean, Corona brought us a lot of change.
Sure.
And this pushed my baking teaching and my baking activities really up to 50% of my income, of my professional life. And this is amazing.
Yeah. We talked about, you know, you were over in Canada and in Ottawa and Toronto and learning and that kind of thing. And when did sort of the baking as something that you're doing for a little bit of income and stuff, how did that all, what are you doing and how did that all start for you?
Well, it started actually that I got at one certain moment, I got terribly unhappy with my job. I reached, you know, the dead end of a street after growing.
Yeah.
I had a language school that went really well, and then we stagnated because for sure there were there also too high ambitions. I got more or less into a sort of severe, I wouldn't say burnout, but quite close to a burnout. Mm-hmm. And at one moment I said, okay, look, it doesn't work like this. I can't do this anymore, not like this. Yeah, and then Canada came because I got this opportunity to go over there. And I said, yes. I started working on a PhD.
Oh, wow.
In Canadian literature. I went to Canada and there I discovered culinary studies.
Sure. So did you finish the PhD?
I didn't.
No? Okay.
Because I realized I chose a subject that actually made me sad. I chose aging, you know, that it became so sad at one certain moment. I simply couldn't do it anymore. I found out also that I wanted to pursue this PhD from the wrong reasons.
How so?
I was just following some other people.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
I was just following some other people. It wasn't really something that I wanted for my life.
Right.
Nothing that I planned, nothing that I would burn for.
Yeah, I can relate to that.
And it actually tortured me for quite a few years. Still, I actually had the guts to say, I can't do this.
Yeah.
Or I can, but I will do it in a really lousy manner. I will not be proud.
Right.
Of this. So my husband was very upset with this, but I decided to let it go. I decided to let it go. This is not mine.
Right.
Not my thing.
But then the fascination with culinary happened.
This I always had.
Yeah.
Actually. There was always there. And I taught also a lot of English to culinary students.
Okay.
So I was always there, coming from a family that my grandmothers were baking like mad. And really, there's this huge industrial quantities of bread and brioche and you name it. And in our families, cooking was always a thing. As I met my husband, he's a wonderful cook.
Right.
I mean, he's the better cook of us, between the two of us. Definitely. I'm the better baker, though.
Okay.
And so this was always there. And for a long time, I even ran a cooking blog, and then I dropped it when I decided to go intellectual and pursue a PhD.
Right.
And then the sum of all of these things actually made me unhappy to an unbearable point. And it's now it's strange to admit this like this openly and loud and clear, because for a long time I thought, oh my God, what a failure I am. How can I do this? And then I realized, no, I'm just being true to myself and to what I like. And to what I can actually do at a level that satisfies my perfectionism too.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And it's so tough to see it and feel it until some time's passed. But when you're in the middle of it, it's almost impossible.
Yeah. When you're in the middle of it, this was excruciating for a while, you know?
Sure. And so what did you do when you made that decision?
I started studying.
Okay.
So I dropped one line of study just to enroll into another one. And that continued and continued and continued. And now I am just a few steps away from a full baker certification in Austria.
Oh, which neat.
Will happen hopefully next year.
Hey, good for you. I'm really curious. What's the certification process like in Austria?
Well, if you start really late, like I did, you basically have to learn this from scratch to find a place where you can get some experience. There is a huge offer on educational programs, even for people a little bit older, like I am. So basically, I looked into it and I went everywhere it was possible. I just did this a little bit in a maybe obsessive manner. But with so much joy finding, really, I found my tribe. We are lucky enough to have the studies here recognized by the German state too. And the German studies are, baking studies are also recognized in Austria. I also went to Germany to study and currently I'm studying for certification an additional certification as bread taster, so bread sensory expert, something like this.
and what's that? That sounds so neat.
Basically, that at the end of 6 months of training, I am allowed to work with companies to develop recipes to taste bread and to say, this is okay, this is not okay, here the flavor profile should be improved, or this is wonderful, no need to touch it.
Okay.
To analyze breads optically also, okay, this has the right height according to the standards, this formula is okay. Yeah, things like that.
So it sounds like a sort of like a sommelier for bread, but more as well.
Yeah, the sommelier is another certification offered by the Germans.
Oh, really?
And, okay. And I actually hope that one day, hopefully, I will also be able to take that.
Oh wow! I didn't know anything about that.
This is crazy. Yeah. So the Germans pushed it really to the next level, but for this you have to be a master baker. So as soon as I can get my certification as a Meisterin, hopefully I can go for this. If for sure, but let's see how things evolve. That would be really nice. I don't know what the future will bring. Maybe. I don't know. Let's see. But that would be something really great to do. I know some of the guys. They are just amazing people.
Huh. Wow.
And they relate to bread the same way as the wine sommelier relates to the wine. And I find this fascinating. Yeah. I don't know if I will ever be able to reach that level. It's another story. But yeah.
Well, and so when you said you were moving around and that as part of getting this experience and that, were you working in different bakeries or was this all classroom work or a bit of both, or how did that
happen? A bit of both.
Yeah.
So I had the chance to, well, let's start like this. First of all, I'm in this region where the ladies or the farmer ladies,
mm-hmm.
they bake a lot of bread.
Yes.
And this is here also recognized as a profession by itself. So you can be a farmer and a baker.
Okay.
And these ladies are also delivering classes, and you can go there to take some classes or to work with them.
Okay.
You can also go work in a small bakery if you like to get the true meaning of the baking profession, because, you know, that in the big industrial bakeries makes less sense for me.
Right. Yes.
Because, yeah, to operate some machines, this is a complete other line of business. And that it's a profession by itself as we speak, I think. Yeah. So I did a little bit of everything. I went to small bakeries, I went to school, I went and worked with some of these amazing bakers that still do everything by hand. There is no machine whatsoever involved, and some of them work with, I don't know, 20 kilos of dough at once, and you can only admire the power they have and the strength they have in their arms. And some of them, if you see them, they are such small, delicate ladies, you would never believe they can wrestle with that amount of
right.
dough.
Oh, yeah.
This part of the education was maybe the one that carried the most meaning and maybe also the most knowledge for what I like to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're working with the ladies on the farms, kind of a thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And this knowledge. Sometimes, you know, you get the knowledge in the form of, yeah, and you add 2 spoons of this, and you add a handful of this, and then you just watch the dough, which is also the most important message that you get in the school. You know, What do you have to do? You have to watch the dough. You have to hear the dough.
Right.
And you also have to smell the dough. And at the end, you can, if you really, really like, you can also taste the dough, but, you know, watch it and listen to it. And this is always, I don't know, an experience close to magic somehow.
Sure. Sure. Oh, that's so fascinating. And what have you been doing from sort of the income side of things? Because you said earlier that, especially with COVID now, as the English teachings maybe dropped off, the baking's come up for you. What kinds of things have you been doing?
This is the craziest part of the story, because so last year, February, end of February, we came back from Frankfurt, where I was visiting some bakeries and talking to people and just having this field trip basically there. And the world was still in place. And then, I don't know, a few weeks later, bam, this happens. You know, it's like, what? A lockdown? What's that? Okay, at the beginning, we said, okay, we got it. Great. 1 month of holiday. This cannot be that bad because, okay, I get to sleep and then, good, got it. And then one contract cancellation after the other started coming in. It was shocking. I mean, it started already being okay. And now what? My husband was like, okay, calm down. Things will get sorted out sooner or later. This cannot last forever. And I was like, no, this is a pandemic. It can last forever, you know, or for long enough as to get dramatic. Then I said, okay, so, and if I fret now, what do I gain from this? I can only go crazy. I can only go panicky and depressive. Okay, you know what? I will use this time to perfect my bread baking. And I actually continued baking. You know? And as I was posting this on Instagram and going around and chatting with people on Instagram, some people started asking me, oh my God, but how are you doing this? I would like to, can you please teach me how to make a sourdough? And I was like, huh. Teaching sourdough online, like seriously. But hey, it was a new situation, you know, and the crisis is not necessarily a crisis, but it's also an opportunity sometimes and a chance to reevaluate and to redesign things. And I said, okay, let's try it. So the first person gets the sourdough ready in 5 days, up and bubbly. Oh my God, yes, big success. Post it all over the Instagram. Oh, look what I've made. And then the first breads, better or worse, whatever. It was a nice, nutritious bread made just of flour, water, salt, and for sure a little bit of thyme. Then the people were like, oh my God, what's up? So can you teach us? Can you teach us? Can you teach us? And then this developed into a thing. And I was actually able to earn some money. It didn't charge the world. I mean, in the very beginning, I actually didn't like to have any money because, you know, it was an unusual situation in unusual times.
Right.
When people just like myself needed maybe a little bit of comforting.
Yes.
And then the first person said, after a while, said, no, look, this cannot be like this. I'm just very grateful. And whatever it is, I would like, I cannot give you anything else in return, but my gratitude and maybe a little bit of money. Now, then I said, yes, you know, you have to say yes at one certain moment. Then this developed basically into a business idea. Over the summer, actually, when everything was a little bit better from the point of view of this infection risk, and we also got the vaccine and so on and so forth, I got into a cooperation with a friend of mine, a good friend of mine, that she's a chef, and she has also some cooking classes and tasting experiences and food experience seminars. And we got together and it worked just wonderfully. We had something planned for now, late autumn and in December, but hey, we've got again a lockdown. So everything got canceled, but hopefully things will get better next year and we are going to continue and to develop this. And for the time being, I'm back to studying a lot of things online for my certification. They are doing the theory part now online. And at the same time, I'm back to my old habits now of teaching sourdough online. And I do.
Yeah. So it sounds like, well, if I can't meet people face to face, I'll teach sourdough online. I'll work on my certification. And when we can meet face to face, I'll work with this other person and do like the food experience, baking experience.
Exactly. That
sounds amazing. Yeah.
Exactly. And two years ago, this idea would have been something of science fiction proportions. I mean, seriously, teaching baking online.
Exactly.
What's that? How can this work? And now if I look around me, and this is why I'm going to attend this event tomorrow too, because my fellow bakers should be encouraged to do this too if they need it. And it's also this feeling of getting together in spite of the distance.
That's right. Yes.
And it's somehow this feeling of community that gets created there, and this common passion for good bread and spreading this message of love at the end.
Sure. Oh yeah. Oh, I can totally relate to that. That amount of time that it was like I was just here by myself in the apartment, kind of a thing. Didn't really know anyone. Couldn't go out. These conversations with other bakers. I'm just starting to realize now how much that carried me through the worst of those initial lockdowns and that, because you could at least share stories and you know, go in unexpected directions. It's different than sitting there and just watching, you know, the interaction's important for sure.
I'm glad that you brought this up, because I seriously have a big thank you for you for this idea, for this podcast, because listening to all these stories, you know, in those moments of doubt and of not knowing what to do, when you hear these stories that people actually, I don't know, started, you know, it's exactly like in this song that you're opening the podcast with, you know, how crazy it'd be, you know, that you have this dream that has something to do with bread, whether it's to open a small bakery or is like me sliding from one profession, from teaching into teaching something else.
Yeah.
You know, but still teaching. So I'm carrying my 21 years experience of teaching. I'm translating this into teaching bread for home bakers. I have to admit my and to recognize my own limits. I will never be able to teach in a professional baking school, maybe. Who knows? You know, who knows? But at this moment, I'm just teaching home bakers. And again, listening to all these stories, this gives courage.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and you said earlier to us talking about sort of the culture in the area where you live, about, you know, the women on farms that are farming and baking, and then they teach, you know, and that it's sort of like, well, I've learned this thing. There are people that don't know as much as I know, so I'll teach them. and I'll teach them in the morning and I'll learn for myself in the afternoon kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that's a great way of doing it, you know?
And many of these ladies are now my colleagues in this bread tasting certification. Yeah. And it's amazing to talk to them. It's amazing to hear what's their position on environment issues, on yes. sustainability, on climate change, on how can we actually bring forward and share this knowledge and this attitude towards bread, you know, as this wonderful, wonderful food that sustained us through millennia, if you think, you know, for real now. And to see also how important this has become again during this pandemic, which is not over.
No, goodness no.
It's amazing how this not only nourishes our bodies but also nourishes our minds and our souls. And this I find, you know, this I find the maybe the most important message when it comes to bread baking and sharing knowledge and giving the others a little bit of helping hand to master this process after all.
For sure. Oh, beautiful. Well said. I want to thank you, I guess, first off, Laura, for being on the show and sharing your stories. You said you wanted to make sure we circled back and talked about the folks in Toronto. Do you have anything?
Definitely. A big shout out to George Brown College and to all my instructors there. A big thank you and a big I love you and forever gratitude. And yeah, looking forward to be reunited one day if this is over. A really long list of wonderful people there.
Lovely, lovely. Oh, that's great to hear. And thanks for that. Well, and thanks so much for taking the time today on St. Nicholas Day to come and share the stories. And I'm excited for what's next for you. I have to say, I'm a little shooken up just about the song that's the intro to the show. I have to go text my daughter now who did all of that and just wrote it and did it. And the fact that that it grabbed you is pretty remarkable. I have weak knees right now.
Actually, it's seriously. So this song in this short song says it all. You know, it says it all, and it at least for me, it speaks really worlds.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. I really do appreciate that. I'm tearing up now. Cool. Well, thanks so much, and like enjoy your holiday season and all of that. And I hope. Well, I'm confident your cookies are going to turn out this year. And. I'm sending good energy that way, and
thank you, yeah. Thank you much, appreciate it.
and thanks. It's been so great to meet you and to talk with you. I really do appreciate it.
Really, thank you for this invitation. I'm less envious now on all these gorgeous, amazing people that you had as guests for this 3 years now.
Yeah, three and a bit.
Amazing,
it's,
yeah.
It's wild, yeah.
And I'm just grateful to have joined them. Really. To tell my little story, my crazy little story of bread baking.
Well, that was a lot of fun. It's can you get nostalgic about a conversation from 3 weeks ago? I just loved all of the talk of Christmas cookies and Christmas baking and that kind of thing. And it was really intriguing to learn some of the things that Laura is able to do through getting certified as a certified bread baker in Austria in 2021, right? Like it's different than how it works in North America, that's for sure.
this whole idea of being a bread sensory expert and being able to help bakeries by using your sensory skills sounds extremely cool to me. I can tell you right now, I don't know that I have what it takes to do that. That's for sure. That requires some precision that I do not have. But it was pretty awesome to hear about it and to imagine what that might be like. So I hope you enjoyed the conversation. I know I sure did. It was really cool to hear a different perspective from an area of the world that I know very little about. And I really appreciate Laura taking the time to talk with me and to share that conversation with you. So have a great week. If you're just getting back into the swing of things at the bakery, pace yourself. You know, got a whole year ahead of you. If you're still on a break, enjoy it. Enjoy every minute. And if you're right back into the swing of things, you know, bake lots, work hard, take care of yourself. Happy baking. Bye-bye.